Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning to you.
Morning, Andrew. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right. Just to sort of get this out of the way, this is going to be just a one-part Arscast Extra, because you're in Munich, you're at the game, but you've got hotel stuff and checkouts and travel and airports and all that kind of stuff to do. So basically,
sadness, Andrew. Yeah. Sadness to contend with, most importantly of all.
Much like Arsenal, we're only going to do one half. Too soon?
Yeah. Maybe slightly too soon, but I enjoyed it nonetheless.
I am kidding, of course. We're here to talk about a 1-0 defeat in the Champions League away to Bayern Munich, which ends our European campaign. And I suppose we have to look at it in the context as well, not just of last night, but in the first leg. So we might come back around to that. But let's talk about last night. Let's talk about the game and talk about the approach of not just Arsenal, but Bayern Munich as well, because I do think it's interesting. You know, the tendency, I suppose, after you lose a game and a big game and everyone's frustrated and disappointed is to focus almost entirely on yourself. And that's fine and understandable. I do think it was quite interesting, though, James, when we maybe step back, objectively think about, you know, what this team is, this Arsenal team is, I should say, and, you know, what we're capable of and where we hope we can go, that the Bayern approach to this game was in some ways, if not quite a doff of the cap to that, it certainly respected what Arsenal could have been capable of, but weren't, unfortunately, on the night.
Yeah, I mean, Thomas Tuchel, it's easy when you win, isn't it? But he was full of praise for Arsenal in his post-match press conference and his pre-match press conference as well, to be fair, talking about them as an elite team. So I think there was a lot of respect there. And I think the first half in particular, I mean, Tuchel described it as like a chess match, you know, with no one wanting to sacrifice a piece. And I felt that was quite accurate. You know, it's two sides playing in a very controlled fashion who I think were deeply aware of the stakes, maybe, of that opening goal, the weight that was attached to it. So I think, you know, Bayern clearly held Arsenal in high regard, but I'm not sure Arsenal ever really quite delivered to their potential across maybe both legs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe the first 15, 20 minutes of the first leg, I think, is probably, you know, more representative of what we would have liked to have seen from Arsenal on a more consistent basis. But, you know, we'll get into maybe why we weren't able to perform at that level across the two games, and certainly in the second half yesterday. So team news was Tomiyasu in at left back, not a surprise. Jorginho in midfield, not a surprise. Havertz back up front, not a surprise. And Martinelli on the left. I think it was really a throw up between Jesus and Martinelli for that left hand side. And like you say, the first half, you know, Bayern were quite explicit before the game, and the manager and the players were talking about how they wanted to play a counter-attacking game. So we had this first 15 minutes or so where Arsenal had a lot of the ball. I think it was 70% possession in the first 15 minutes, where there was a lot of passing across the back line. We weren't taking any risks it's fair to say, but neither were Bayern pressing particularly high. I think as soon as we got towards halfway, they engaged a little bit, but you know, you're playing a team like Bayern Munich who are at home, and you know, whatever people say about the quality of this Bayern Munich side compared to some of the other sides, and I think there are some fair comparisons to be made. This isn't a team without quality. This is not a team that's just sort of making up the numbers, even if Bayer Leverkusen have made it look like that this season in the Champions League, you know, from front to back, but more specifically in midfield and going forward. They have a lot of quality, but, you know, they sat off with 11 men behind the ball. And that to me was kind of an extraordinary sight, even if, as we said, Bayern were clear about their intentions before the game. They wanted to invite Arsenal on and then use those players that they had to create moments of transition where, I think in the first half where they were dangerous, that's exactly how they did it.
Yeah, I think inevitably when you lose, you know, there's a tendency to focus on the negative. But I thought those first few minutes from Arsenal were really impressive, actually, to come into stadium like that, an atmosphere like that against a team with Bayern's sort of lineage in this competition and dominate the ball, I thought demonstrated a real maturity and gave Arsenal a really strong foothold in the game. Mm. But I, also in some ways that first 3 minutes was kind of instructive of how things might go, because I remember watching Arsenal keep the ball, look pretty comfortable, and then almost out of nowhere, the first chance of the game fell to Bayern. I think it was Sane going down the outside and crossing for Kane. And that sort of set a bit of a pattern, really, where Arsenal would have possession, but because of that threat and because of the attacking player that Bayern have on the break, you know, sometimes they presented the greater danger despite sitting off. So, yeah, it was a sort of interesting tactical battle in those early stages.
Yeah, it was. And Bayern, I think, in the first half and I think in the second half, probably had the better chances. Certainly in the second half, of course, but in the first half too, you know, despite the fact that I think Arsenal played, I think we played pretty well in that first half. I think it was a relatively smart approach, you know, because you're away from home, you're playing Bayern, you go in at halftime 0-0. I think that would have been, if not the plan, certainly a scenario that Mikel Arteta and his coaching staff would have targeted, or at least if it got to that point in the game, they would have been pretty pleased about the fact that it was 0-0 at halftime and you know, would come to the second half. But there were moments, I think, for Bayern where things did break down a little bit for Arsenal. And maybe this is something we can touch on a bit, is that it felt to me like the combinations that Arsenal are capable of producing, which provide those moments of danger, we saw them occasionally. I think Ben White got down the right once, but the Saka Odegaard White triangle, you know, those little combinations on the edge of the box didn't quite come off on the left-hand side. Havertz and Martinelli not quite connecting the way you might like at times. And there were sort of nearly moments for Arsenal in that half, whereas when Bayern came forward, there was the block at the near post from Mazraoui, is that how you pronounce his name? Mazraoui, where, you know, they came down their left-hand side, Bayern, and Ben White got overtaken and then got back brilliantly to make a block at the near post. Musiala had a shot from distance where I think we didn't quite engage quickly enough. We backed off. And at the other end, it didn't really happen for Arsenal beyond that Martinelli chance.
Yeah, I mean, they did kind of block up our right-hand side. They sort of played two left-backs, of course, with Guerrero. I know he can play in midfield, but playing, you know, on the left side of midfield there, almost the second left-back. And I think we did sort of struggle to progress to get those combinations of play. You know, I felt that sometimes we didn't make the most of opportunities where we won the ball by pressing quite high. There was one where Declan Rice took it off Lima, but I think Kai Havertz looked for Bukayo Saka with the pullback and couldn't quite execute it. There was another moment, Ben White got in behind, but his cross was poor. you know, I think Arsenal's final ball on the night was quite lacking. One they did get right was when Odegaard found Martinelli in the box, and obviously side foots it straight at the keeper. I mean, do you think you should have done better there?
It's one of those where I think with the benefit of a replay, you can see he might have been able to take a quick touch and shoot with his right foot. But at the same time, I understand why when he saw that ball coming towards him, he thought maybe a first-time shot might catch the goalkeeper out. Unfortunately, it was straight at the goalkeeper. I think it's easy for us sometimes with the benefit of replays to be able to say he had more time than he thought. You know, we're looking at it from a very different angle from him. He's got all these big Bayern defenders around him, sees the ball. You know, it's one of those where it could go between the goalkeeper's legs. It's one of those where if he puts it a few feet one side of Neuer, he can't react quickly enough. Maybe there wasn't quite enough pace on the shot. I think he was trying to use the pace of the ball to guide it into the net rather than blast it himself. But it was an opening. It was an opening. And, you know, it's why I think, you know, sort of parallels to the Aston Villa game in a bit where I sort of thought, okay, There's enough happening here to give me a little bit of encouragement for the second half. It's not been brilliant. I think, you know, the caution in the first half was quite deliberate. Like, nobody wanted to give the game away. Arsenal certainly didn't want to give the game away. And I think it's impossible to look at that first half approach and not think it was informed a little bit by what happened at the Emirates and the two goals that we gave away there, where maybe by taking a couple of risks, we gave away two goals that ultimately have proved very, very costly. But I think in the pre-game talk, in the preparations, they would have said, look, safety first in this first half, and then we'll go again and see what we can do in the second.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I felt pretty content at halftime. I felt pretty pleased with how Arsenal had sort of, asserted themselves. That's not quite the word, asserted themselves.
Stayed in it, though, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. You know, that they were in the game, and, you know, if they could get their attacking game going, we're in a very strong position. And it's interesting, I remember chatting to Sam Dean of the Telegraph at half-time, and he said to me, Arsenal are the better team, but Bayern have the better players. And some people might contest that, but I know exactly what he meant. You know, Arsenal sort of structurally, organisationally, in a lot of ways, were superior. But Bayern, I always felt like maybe had slightly more of that cutting edge. And unfortunately, that's kind of how it proved in the second half.
Yeah, I think I do know what he means, because I wrote a tweet after the game and I said, you can't fault the effort, but we didn't really create anything on the night. And, you know, some people took exception to that, suggesting that the effort wasn't there. I think the effort was there. I think the application was there. For me, this was much more an issue of quality than application, if that makes sense. Because, you know, you make the point about the Bayern players. I think you could see that they had players who could make a difference in a tight game like this, who had qualities to deal with this game, you know, as it played out and as the second half played out. And for me, it was much more about what we lacked in terms of quality. I don't think anybody out on that pitch just went through the motions or anything like that. So, you know, as we look to analyze this second half, the things perhaps that this game has taught us most are kind of what we're missing, and we might come back to that. But, I mean, what's your thought on that? Like, having been there in the stadium and having watched it from the vantage point that you watched it, did you feel like this was an Arsenal team that didn't try or was lacking effort in any way?
No, I really didn't think that. And it would be odd if that were the case. You know, they're playing in a Champions League quarterfinal. They're a hugely motivated group. I think the effort was absolutely there. Now, whether or not the legs were quite there to match you know, the sort of psychological effort, I'm not so sure. I do think that over the past 8 days or so, there have been periods where they have looked a bit leggy. And, you know, if you go back in time a few months and think about players like Declan Rice and Martin Odegaard, I think there was a level of zip to their play that maybe isn't there right now. You could say the same for Bukayo Saka, certainly, probably Gabriel Martinelli. I've made the point before, but Arsenal have got a lot of players who are available, but I'm not sure how many players they've got who are fully match fit.
Yeah.
And even if you look to the bench, you know, the fact that you can't bring on somebody like a Thomas Partey in an occasion like this, I think it just tells you, you know, these guys don't have rhythm. They're not at the level that you want at this point in the season.
Maybe it goes a little bit beyond that, you know, which we can circle back around to.
Yeah, so I think fatigue is starting to be a factor, but I don't think effort is an issue. But I do agree with you that Bayern had some players whose quality shone through on the night. I mean, Musiala,
yeah,
would be the obvious pick.
He was really, really good. And, you know, I think what we saw, the moments of danger that Bayern created and ultimately the goal that they got came from players doing what our players were not capable of doing, which was driving between the lines and opening up the game a little bit. We were not able to open up the game. And part of that was because I think Bayern sat off when we had the ball and made it very difficult for us to do that. But also I think we don't necessarily have the kind of player in the team who could do what Musiala did. Like midfield, could it be, with all due respect to someone like Jorginho, a little more dynamic? I think it probably could, and maybe that's something we've got to consider and a direction we've got to go in.
It was striking to me that when Bayern escaped our press, it wasn't often by sort of intricate passing moves. It was just by driving past people, running through people. And you know, to come back to sort of the physical point, I don't know if you could do that to Arsenal in January, February, March, but at the moment, it feels a bit like you can. And the sort of relative ease with which both they, and you have to say Aston Villa, were able to bypass our press, to me is indicative of a team that is sort of feeling the season at this point, right?
That is a big point, and I want to come back to that because I think it is an important part of this discussion. But second half, you know, first half was relatively even in terms of possession. So was the second half. I think we had more shots than Bayern in the first half. I think it was 7-4. In the second half, it was 11-2. And I think Bayern set the tone pretty early on, didn't they? They hit the bar in the first minute or two of the second half. Goretzka, a little bit of a warning there. A guy running from deep, getting a header on a cross, hit the bar, and I think the ball, was it Guerrero, whose shot was then deflected onto the post? You know, so some warning signs, I think, from Bayern in the opening stages of the second half. And I don't know if that kind of early, I don't want to call it an onslaught because I don't think it was necessarily that, but that pressure that they put on us, whether that had an impact on our second half performance, I'm not sure. But certainly from the start, they looked a bit more like the team that was going to be able to get a goal in this game.
Yeah, they did. And there was a couple of scares. You mentioned them hitting the woodwork right at the start of the half, which does sort of, I think, set the tone a little bit and invigorate the crowd and turn things in their direction. Gabriel nearly gave me a heart attack.
Yeah.
Very nearly scoring a spectacular own goal. And I think those things just gave Bayern the upper hand, a bit of momentum in the game. And we never really sort of, you know, came back into it from our perspective by creating significant chances. I mean, you know, it is a bit reminiscent of Aston Villa on Sunday, where in the second half, you know, they seemed to settle and find another gear, and we just didn't.
Yeah, the amount of texts I had midway through the second half, and particularly after the Bayern goal, from people saying, uh-oh, this feels very Villa.
I mean, about the goal itself, Andrew? Thoughts on that one?
Well, we talked about the way that Bayern were able to drive and get forward, and I think it was Laimer who drove through midfield beyond Odegaard to Kimmich to Sané. I mean, it's one of those where when you look at it, you know, the cross, the initial cross comes in from Sané, goes to the back post. Could Ben White maybe do a little bit more to close down the cross back in? Martinelli, who I think defensively was really, really good all night and helped Tomiyasu so well with that threat of Leroy Sané. Like, Sané had a couple of moments here or there, but really wasn't that threatening because in part of what Martinelli was doing, and it was Martinelli, when you look back, like he's chased all the way back to the byline to try and stop Sané getting that first cross in. And then when the ball comes back in, is Tomiyasu caught on his heels a little bit? Martinelli isn't aware of the run of Kimmich. And it's one of those where I think it's very difficult for the goalkeeper to stop. You know, just a little bit of, not quite ball watching, but we weren't switched on. Martinelli wasn't aware of where Kimmich was coming from, and he got in front of him to score the goal.
Yeah, I think it's that thing of, like you say, Martinelli had run back half the length of the pitch, you know, to get to Sané and force him to the byline. And I imagine as a winger, it's a very different thing to be sort of in your box trying to pick up a run into the box than it is to be following back and tracking a man. You know, he's having to defend much more like a fullback in that situation, which is less natural to him. And yeah, I guess Tomiyasu and Rice may be a bit static or caught a bit unawares. I mean, again, you know, not to hammer home the point, but it was a little bit reminiscent of the cross against Aston Villa, which went, you know, left three Arsenal players sort of on their heels as forgotten his name, the Jamaican winger stole in to
Leon Bailey.
Yeah, so Leon Bailey. So, yeah, but I mean, you know, you've got to give Bayern their due. It's a good delivery and a very good header, but from an Arsenal perspective, not a good goal to concede.
Mikel Arteta responded immediately, brought on Trossard and Jesus for Martinelli and Jorginho, which meant Rice dropping a little bit deeper. These were the subs which had a big impact. Same subs, or same two players coming on anyway, which had a big impact in the first leg. So I guess it was an element of that, you know, on top of the fact that they are the two most obvious players to bring on at that point of the game. But there just wasn't anything in the tank, I don't think. And I don't know that we necessarily helped ourselves with some of the decisions that we made or some of the execution that we had. It really felt like a goal from a set piece would probably be the only way we were going to find a way through against Bayern. Like there was that Odegaard shot, which was saved, you know, took a deflection and was saved, which could have got us a corner. I know people are upset about that, but
yeah, you know, was there another Odegaard deflected shot from the edge of the box? Maybe
that was in the first half, I think.
That was in the first half. No, I pulled that away. Yeah, I mean, obviously there was that one that obviously definitely should have been a corner, wasn't given. But then I suppose when you look at the corner delivery over the course of the game, maybe it wouldn't have been that much help.
Exactly. If we were slinging in brilliant corner after brilliant corner. But look, it only takes a moment. And if people want to be aggrieved by that, they can be aggrieved by that. I also think it's fair to point out that, you know, when you've got a late free kick and Rice takes it out to Trossard takes too many touches, then fouls a Bayern player, that's not good enough at this level. You know, it may not have resulted in anything. It probably wouldn't, but you've got to do better than that in that situation. And then later on, we have a corner in the final kick of the game, basically. Bukayo Saka doesn't get it beyond the front post, and his corner delivery is usually a lot better than that. So, you know, those are just slight what-ifs. I think overall, you have to look at that second half and circle back around to the discussion around tired legs, not enough zip, fatigue. Whatever way you want to put it, I just don't think there was anything in the tank for Arsenal to react once Bayern went ahead.
And I think on the ball, not enough of Arsenal's players performed to the level that you need to if you want to qualify for a Champions League semi-final. You know, even players who we can usually rely on, the likes of Bukayo Saka, thought he had a very, you know, disappointing evening, some way short of his best. Kai Havertz, I don't think we saw much of him in the game. Martinelli, I think, worked hard, but there wasn't necessarily a great deal of attacking threat to complement that. So, yeah. And it's striking to, I think, the substitutions that were made and those that weren't. I think this indicated where Arteta's trust lies. And as we've kind of always known and suspected, it's with quite a narrow group within the squad.
Well, this is it. And it's impossible to talk about, let's say, Bukayo Saka not playing to his best in this game. You know, having been very good, I think, in the first game, scoring the goal, and I'm sure he will be steaming over the penalty that he should have got towards the end of the first leg, and whether that would have made a big difference, we'll never know, I guess, but it would have put us in the lead going into last night's game. So the discussion about him, maybe the discussion about Odegaard, discussion about Rice, I think has to take into account just how much they have played and what you just said about the changes we made and the changes that we didn't make. And it's clear and has been clear that Arteta's belief, trust, faith, if you want to call it that, in certain members of his squad is limited. I think when you're putting on Eddie Nketiah in the, this is no slight on Eddie, but I think if you're putting on Eddie Nketiah in the 85th minute of a Champions League quarterfinal and you're looking for a goal from a guy who's got one goal in his last 23 appearances for Arsenal, albeit many, many of those, you know, from the bench as short cameos, I think that tells you something about your squad. And I also think that in a game like this, where players are clearly fatigued or have been asked to do so much that it is impacting the level of performance that they're capable of, when you look at the bench, right, and there's Emile Smith Rowe, and there's Fabio Vieira, and there's Thomas Partey, and there's Reece Nelson, and they're not given any minutes whatsoever in a game like this, you know, without jumping to huge conclusions or anything like that, if they're not being used in this circumstance, if the manager doesn't deem them fit for purpose for a Champions League quarterfinal, when you're desperate, when you absolutely need something from somebody to get something from the game, I think you have to just say, okay, we've got to move on and upgrade from as many of these guys as we possibly can when it comes to the summer.
I think that's fair, but I also think that the curious thing about Mikel at times is that, you know, as you say, I think his trust is quite narrow. You know, I think he's got a group he really likes, but a lot of those players that he doesn't feel particularly inclined to use, he's played quite a big role in them staying at the club.
Yeah.
So, you know, contracts for Eddie, contracts for Reece, telling Smith Rowe he can't go last summer, you know, signing Fabio Vieira. All of these things, I think there is some culpability on the part of the technical team at the club. You know, they've chosen to keep these players around at times when many people on the outside have said, surely it's time to move on from them. So, you know, I partly just to play devil's advocate, I think there are some questionable decisions along the way that have led to some of those situations.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. Like, it's not to suggest that he's not in any way responsible, because it's his squad that he's built with Edu. I think you made the point earlier on that, like, if we had gone into this game on the back of, you know, with a load of injuries or something like that, and he's got to rely on these players who've been playing week in, week out, you know, you can say, okay, fair enough, we didn't have a lot of choice. But, you know, this is the fittest, apart from Jurrien and Timber, that this squad has been. Like, Vieira's fit. Nelson is fit. Smith Rowe is fit. Partey, you know, in the context of Thomas Partey, is probably fit. He's on the bench. You know, these players are not being used by choice by the manager. And I think that sort of tells us what he thinks of their ability to impact a game of this level.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably there's fit and there's fit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but have we done the most we can to get someone like Fabio Vieira to that level of sort of match sharpness? Probably not, and probably not by choice. You know, since he came back into the squad, he's barely featured, and that probably tells its own story. So yeah, I think, you know, whenever you lose, it tells you quite a lot about yourself and where you are in your trajectory. And I think we learn a lot about the limitations of this squad. And we spend a lot of time, you know, we win a lot of games. We've had a really positive season in a lot of ways. And so inevitably you focus on the positives. But sometimes when you lose, it teaches you a bit more, or it shows you kind of the parameters or how much further you've got to go.
This is Mikel Arteta speaking after the game. Just a little clip from his press conference.
Well, we haven't played in the competition for 7 years. We haven't been in this position for 14 years. There is a reason for it, you know, and we want to do everything fast forward, super quick, in one season. And I thought we had the capacity and the quality to be in the semi-finals because the margins have been very small. But those margins, some that are coming from something else that maybe we don't have yet and we have to learn it. But today, that is not going to make us feel better, that's for sure.
Which, you know, I think is very hard to argue with, really. It is our first game back in the Champions League, or first quarterfinal in the Champions League for such a long time. I don't think there's any huge disgrace in going out at the quarterfinal stage. I think it is a missed opportunity because I agree with Arteta that I think if we had played our best over the two legs, I think we were capable of beating Bayern Munich. But when he talks about things, you know, that we don't have yet and things that we need to learn, you know, to what extent do you think he's talking about adding to the squad, you know, players who can maybe, like, it feels to me that this is an Arsenal team where the success, if you want to call it that, right, or the progress, the development has been based on collectivism. But it felt to me last night that we could use a little bit of individualism, that maybe just a player with the quality to impact a game. And I know it's not like they grow on trees or whatever, but you know, that felt like something that was missing for me. That guy who could just fuck one in from 30 yards, or the, you know, the player who could burst through the midfield and get Bayern running back towards their own goal. You know, I think we've got some excellent players and some very, very good individuals, but they work within this collective structure. So, you know, when they think about how they build a squad or who they bring in next season, you know, is that something that they should be looking at? And when he talks about learning, you know, do we have to take into account the experience that Bayern have? We talked about it maybe in the context of the Porto game where we said, look, they've been in this competition for season after season after season, and you could see the benefit of that for them. Ultimately, I think we had enough over just enough over the two legs in terms of player quality to offset the experience that they have. But when you think about Bayern's experience plus the quality that they have, you know, this is what we've got to learn as well, that the Champions League campaign has showed us what we're missing in terms of certain players or certain qualities within the team, but also how you manage games and maybe how you manage the games before these kinds of games as well.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think, you know, Tuchel admitted that experience might have given his side an extra few percent on the night. And I think the point about individualism is a fascinating one. You know, we sort of talked about it a bit after the Villa game, but it feels like Arsenal have to get quite a lot right to execute and score. You know, the game plan has to fire perfectly. And I seem to remember us having a conversation earlier this season where, you know, we were asked about past players that we'd like to add to this team. And I think I banged the drum for Alexis Sanchez because he is a player who exists kind of outside of the system in some ways, who can really pull a rabbit out of a hat. And do Arsenal have anyone truly capable of that or on a regular basis? You know, of course, on his day, Martin Odegaard can find a through ball that other players won't see, or Bukayo Saka can, you know, fox a defender and lash one into the far post. But have you got a player who, you know, week in, week out, when things aren't going your way, when you need that breakthrough, when you need that cutting edge, in the vein of a Mo Salah or somebody of that ilk, can they prove the difference? I'm not sure Arsenal necessarily do have that kind of maverick match winner talent.
I agree, yeah.
We're a very good team, but I do think a sprinkling of stardust would take us to another level.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing just to point out is that, you know, this individualism, it doesn't have to be completely separate from the collective structure. Like, I think a player who has those qualities, who has that ability, can thrive in a system like Arteta's, where we do a lot right to get to the final third, but in that final third, you need that little bit of spark. So I think it's a fascinating discussion about, you know, what kind of a player they could bring in who is not just going to play for himself. You know, Alexis was a really exciting player, but you got to a point where it was all about, look at how many times he lost the ball. And you have this sort of schism between, well, he lost the ball because he was trying to make something happen. And, you know, the other people go, yeah, but like, he's just playing for himself. He's just trying to be a bit of a glory hunter or whatever it might be. But I think that balance between stardust, if you want to call it that, or just high quality plus belief in your own ability within the structure that's available to you to hurt or to cause the other team problems, I think is really interesting, because it feels a bit like I love Arteta, but it feels like he just needs to bend a little bit that way. Like, his own principles, his own ideals have got us, you know, a long way. And there's such a lot to like about what we've done and what he's done and what this team, you know, where we are now. We're in it, you know, we're in a Champions League, or we're in a Champions League quarterfinal, which was a couple of seasons ago kind of unthinkable, or certainly aspirational in the extreme. So we've got to a really good point. But maybe as part of his process is like, okay, I need to think about how can I work that kind of individualism into my collective system.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know they're out of the Champions League now, but Man City have so often been the model, I think, for everybody, including Mikel. And, you know, Pep Guardiola has a very structured way of playing, but he has been able to accommodate individuals like Riyad Mahrez or Jeremy Doku this season, which I do think adds kind of an X factor to your attacking play. And I have felt at times this season that Arsenal lack that. I mean, the story of our seasons over the past few years has kind of been that we've sort of exceeded expectations, or maybe
been ahead, you know, of schedule
a little bit. And then in the run-in, that sort of comes home to roost. And, you know, the following year, we look a bit more comfortable at that level. And I think that's probably going to be the case with the Champions League for Arsenal this year. You know, we look like a team who are capable of maybe going all the way to the final. Ultimately, we haven't done it, but I think the experience will stand us in good stead. But yeah, I, you know, this is kind of a bigger point, and I'll be honest, I haven't done sort of the research and run all the numbers to sort of demonstrate whether or not this is true or not. But I think, like, we spent a long time this season really lauding the team for its structure, its organization, its defensive capabilities, but saying, you know, maybe there was an element of kind of free-flowing, attacking, goal-scoring play missing. And then obviously the turn of the year came, the squad went to Dubai, and we went on a fantastic run where we scored a load of goals. But it feels to me like maybe at the end of this season, the conversation might circle round to be a bit more similar to what it was at the start. And, you know, I'm sure all the data guys will dig into it and try and, you know, and demonstrate, was that a rich vein of form? Was it a purple patch? Is it who we really are? But I think in the, when you look at the full picture of the campaign, I think that theme of being a very well-coached, organized team that maybe just missed that spark in attack, I think that may be something that we sort of take away from the season as a whole.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with, thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Yeah, I mean, there were questions afterwards about Stryker. I saw the CBS coverage and Peter Schmeichel interviewing Mikel Arteta and talking about, you know, whether we needed that forward, whether that is, you know, the forward is the individualist that we've been talking about. I'm not 100% sure. And he said, look, we don't have that. We've scored the most goals of anybody, which, you know, is absolutely fair. But I also think that when we consider that desire for a forward, it's not just about scoring goals, is it? I mean, it seems redundant or maybe a little bit stupid to say we all want to bring in a new centre forward. I think you can look at the options we have with Jesus, hit and miss in front of goal when he's fit. Eddie, I think not what a title-winning team needs, even if he is third choice. With all due respect, I think, you know, his time has come. Kai Havertz has done well, but was brought in as a midfielder and is sort of, you know, a default centre forward, if you like, because he's the best option that we have at this moment in time. So the idea that you can bring in a kind of classic number nine, whatever that might be, to score you a load of goals makes a lot of sense, I think, in everybody's head. But when I try and contextualize it in light of what we saw last night, it's also about what a player like that might be able to do in terms of how you play and the different way that perhaps, you know, the last 20 minutes or 25 minutes of a game like that might go, because you have a different way of playing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I take the point from Arteta if we've scored the most goals, but I would argue we've done that by running up cricket scores against the likes of Sheffield United and Burnley, you know, and on days when things have been going our way, we've plundered a few extra goals. I think the kind of players we're talking about adding are the guys who can find you a breakthrough, find you a goal when it's not going your way.
Yes.
When the team isn't clicking. And that might be a centre forward. You know, it might be a guy who's such a good finisher, you know, like the guy Bayern have leading up front for them, who he can turn a half chance into a goal.
Never heard
you
of
know?
It.
Or it might be a winger who, you know, in a game like yesterday's, where certainly for the first hour it was so structured, so disciplined, two teams sitting in a block, it becomes about, well, which winger can do more damage in the one-on-one, you know? Mm. And I think probably if it looked like Ed being anybody, it looked like being Leroy Sané. And in the first leg, it probably was Leroy Sané. So it can be that type of X factor that you add. There are all sorts of ways you can do it. It might be a creative midfield player who finds a pass that no one else sees. I think that's what makes it exciting and interesting. But they're the days, they're the times when we just need that little bit more. And
yeah,
that's fine, you know. You learn that. And I think if we're really honest, we've kind of, on some level, known that all season long. We were talking about it in August, September, October. We're talking about it again now in April. It's been a pretty consistent theme. And, yeah, it'll be a theme over the summer, I'm sure.
Yeah. So how do you think about this Champions League campaign? Because, look, it's not really about what other teams do. You look at the teams that went out of the tournament this week: Atletico Madrid, Manchester City, Barcelona, Arsenal. You know, it tells you that there is a level to this competition. I think there are regrets, you know, from the first leg in particular about this tie. As I said, I think if we'd played our best over the course of these two games, I think we might just have had enough to go beyond Bayern. But as an experience for the team, for the manager, for the club, you know, being back at this level, how do you view it? I have to say, I don't like being out. And I'm disappointed and frustrated that, you know, for various reasons, as we've spoken about, we weren't able to play our best football in these two games. But I think as an experience, it's probably going to be very useful, even if the, you know, Champions League format, you know, is a bit weird next season. But once you get to the knockout stages, you know, the learnings that you can take from this are hopefully going to be very useful.
Yeah, I think we probably performed at about par, I suppose, in the Champions League, ultimately. I think before the season, we would have said, you know, we expected certainly to make the knockouts and probably, you know, most likely the quarterfinals. I think semi-finals would have been a success. And when I look at the draw and I look at the teams who've gone out, I have to be honest and say it does feel a little bit like an opportunity missed. You know, certainly I think Madrid and Bayern, when they look at the other side of the draw, will fancy themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it, you know, City going out was kind of a double blow for Arsenal, because A, it means, you know, we missed out on that, what would have been a fantastic tie against Real Madrid. But it also B, means their focus is very much on the Premier League at this point in time, which isn't ideal for us either.
Would you would have preferred them to
stay in it? I would, yeah.
Like, I enjoyed their penalty shootout failure last night.
Thanks to Bernardo Silva, I had a good laugh at that.
Yeah, it was very, very funny. And I don't want to see them win or be successful, obviously. But I was of the mind that the vague outside hope that we might have for the Premier League, particularly when you consider what Mikel Arteta is going to need to do to pick his team up for the game against Wolves on Saturday, would have been just ever so slightly more possible if Manchester City were potentially, maybe, perhaps, a little bit distracted by you know, a Champions League semi-final. And, you know, who knows what the cost of those two games might have been to them in terms of injuries or fatigue or form or whatever. So, you know, I enjoyed their elimination, particularly when you looked at, I was watching the extra time in that game, and they were all over Real Madrid. And it's quite funny when you think about a club of the stature of Real Madrid and the way that City were dominating them in this game, but still went out. It is, you know, that's football for you.
I think, like I say, it's probably a blow to Arsenal in the league. But coming back to the Champions League, like I said, I had that slight feeling of, oh, you know, it's kind of there to be won this year. But I don't think we are ready. And I think, you know, when you look at our knockout games, the two matches against Porto, the two matches against Bayern, I'm not sure we were especially convincing, you know, across those four games.
Do you think that is experience of knockout competitions? Is it the occasion? Is it the, you know, the expectation that comes with the Champions League? Like, do the players think about these games slightly differently in their minds because of the stature of the competition? And, you know, they'll all have grown up with the Champions League, and this is their first time in it for most of them anyway, you know, beyond a couple that we've mentioned. Like, is that part of, you know, maybe why we weren't quite at our best? Or, you know, do we have to accept as well that European football brings its own unique challenges in comparison to the Premier League? Despite the level, the technical level, the physical level of the Premier League, there are different kinds of challenges in Europe that you have to get used to.
Yeah, I think it's about learning to swim in deeper waters in some respects. But I also think, you know, we were facing the challenge for the first time of juggling a Premier League and a Champions League campaign. You know, Mikel Arteta, he's had European football in the past, but it's been the Europa League. He's been much more able to rotate. And I think it does come in part back to that point we had about squad size or squad depth, true depth in terms of trust, you know, and managing that over such a long season, fighting on multiple fronts. I think there's no shame, like you say, going out to Bayern Munich in the quarterfinals. It's just been quite a bruising week, hasn't it, to be an Arsenal fan?
Yeah, a tough one. A really tough week, you know, with the, like, I think this would be much easier to compartmentalize had we not been beaten by Aston Villa, you know, the weekend. Yeah. You know, that is the reality of that. And
It just makes the Wolves game on Saturday absolutely enormous. I think Mikel Arteta's got a huge task on his hands to pick the players up before Saturday night, because my overriding kind of feeling coming out of the game last night was that I just don't want to see Arsenal collapse again.
Sure, sure.
You know, I think it's so important to preserve, you know, the idea of progress. I think if Arsenal fall into that nasty habit of just kind of their form going out the window in the final few games of the season, I think it will erode a lot of that feeling of having taken a step forward. So I really, really, really hope we can finish strong and force Man City to win the games they need to win to lift the title. You know, at least push them all the way. I really, really do hope for that. And I'll be honest and say I'm not especially confident of it right now.
I get that.
Because I could understand that the players will feel mentally and physically, I think, quite exhausted by the last week.
Shattered. They looked shattered at the end of the game. Yeah. And this maybe comes back around to the point that we were making about using your squad or having faith in your squad or building a squad. Because it's not as if the resources haven't been put into it. It's just that the resources that the manager deems fit for purpose are not quite at the level that we need. The other thing is that we can go top of the Premier League if we beat Wolves. That is the,
I know, yeah.
That's the fucking, the carrot and the donkey thing. You know, there's the fucking carrot. We're the donkey and there's the carrot. The carrot is the top of the Premier League. We've got, you know, to be a bit less donkey and just make sure we get the carrot. Is that how it works? I'm not sure.
Something like that. Yeah, I mean, listen, yeah, there's a... What does Mikel Arteta always say? A beautiful challenge in front of us. Six Premier League games remaining. I suspect that even if Arsenal win all six, it may ultimately not be enough, you know, because City being City. But we've got to give absolutely everything to do that and to get to this finish line, you know, with our heads up. I think it's really, really important for the squad and for the fans to do that. And I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't know what Mikel will do. You know, do you try and rally that team for another big push? Do you make a load of changes to freshen things up?
Mm.
It's a really tricky one, but I think that Wolves game is big now, because I think obviously anything but a win there, being honest, and I think the obituaries for Arsenal's season will probably be written.
Yep, I think that's fair. We will talk a bit more about that Wolves game tomorrow. We'll preview it over on Patreon. There is a press conference, I think, tomorrow. Quite what information we might get from Mikel Arteta ahead of this game remains to be seen, but there is obviously plenty to talk about in terms of how we approach it and with which personnel we approach this game. But look, we had better leave it there for now. Look, the Champions League exit, the performance, all these issues that we've talked about will no doubt reverberate over the coming days. So we'll have plenty to talk about for you. If you want to join us for our preview podcast, it's patreon.com/arseblog. James, safe travels back home.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Back to England shortly.
So. All right. To you guys, thank you for being with us. Thank you for enjoying this one half Arsecast Extra. We'll have another one for you on Monday, where hopefully we're talking about Arsenal being top of the league and things feel a little bit better than they do right now. For now, though, take it easy, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.